Hello, welcome to this week's Opening Bell. I'm boxing news editor Tris Dixon, joined for a special one-off by Eddie Hearn. Eddie, how's it going?
It's all right. I feel a bit, I feel like I'm cheating on Coogan Cassius.
I thought you were about to say Sky Sports.
Them as well. But no, it's good to be here. Nice to see the operational, system behind boxing news. I thought it was just you and a typewriter, to be honest with you. Very plush offices here in central London. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, thanks for dropping by. It's a short notice thing, but it's been a busy week, so I did want to run some things by you, really, because we haven't had much of a chat on the phone over the last few weeks. Part of the reason is because you were on holiday in Mauritius,
hence it's not a spray tan.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Everyone sees me now and goes, where's he been? Caning the sunbeds over Christmas. I was away. I had a couple of weeks away to recharge. It was great.
But when that starts to fade, obviously that's when the sunbeds and the spray
Not spray tans, because I don't agree with spray tans. And I don't have sunbeds, but I have had sunbeds in the past, in my youth.
Truth always comes out.
I'll tell you the truth,
Okay, so we've just had the big announcement today, officially, that Darren Barker's retired. Sad to see him go?
Sad and happy. I know what Darren Barker's had to go through in his career. And there was a beautiful moment in Stuttgart where, obviously, Darren lost. It wasn't so beautiful. And then we went back to the change room and his family were in tears and Darren was in tears and obviously agony. He went to the hospital and then he came back to the hotel. It was, I don't know, 1 in the morning or something like that. And we just sat down and we were just having a beer. And I looked in his eyes and it was like, I knew it was over, and we both knew it was over for good then. Even though we went through the formalities of having the scans and seeing what the problem was. And it was like, he looked so relieved, it was like the biggest weight was off his shoulders. And, that makes me really happy that I know that he can retire at peace with himself, because essentially he's achieved his ultimate goal, an ultimate dream to become the world champion. And probably one against the head, Tris, for British fighters, don't you think? You look at someone like Darren Barker, who we all know has got a huge amount of talent. But how many times does a fighter like Darren Barker go and win a world title? But I always knew that when we talked him back into the ring after the Martinez fight, when he had another operation and then he had a torn bicep when he was supposed to fight Rotolo, I knew that if he retired at that moment, he would have trouble coming to terms with his career and what could have been. Now he will have no trouble at all. In fact, he's going to have a great life. He's financially secure. And he's become a world champion. So I'm really, it's a sad day, but it's probably one of my happiest days as a promoter, because I feel really content myself.
How much could he have made for a Stern fight, a Stern rematch, bearing in mind the rematch clause and everything?
Probably half what he made for the, if he would have lost the fight, the rematch would have been half. But it's not, of course every fighter, and people talk about, it's not about the money. Of course it's about the money. But for Darren, it was never about getting loads and loads of money. Once he'd paid the mortgage off and he's got a few quid, that was the ultimate goal. And, the payday for the Stern fight was incredible, and there would have been a big payday for the rematch. But unfortunately, he didn't want to do it anymore, and his body wouldn't allow him to do it anymore. And the surgeon said, it looks like you're going to have another operation on the hip. And then as soon as that said, I think even if the surgeon would have said, it's not too bad, have a month off and then you can get back to it, I'm not sure, because like I said in many interviews, I feel that Darren Barker left a piece of his soul in Atlantic City that night, because he had to dig so deep into the well that I don't think he had much left, and don't get me wrong, his preparation from the Stern fight, he had niggles, but he has niggles in every camp, and he wanted it bad. He was proud champion and he really wanted to defend that belt, but deep down, I think that Gill victory took a piece of him. He had to summon up something, from within to win that Gill fight. And I'm pleased that it's finally come out, because obviously we knew over the last couple of weeks that was going to be it. And he said to me, I think 3 or 4 days ago, "Can we announce now?" Because people keep asking him, and he wants closure. And he wants to enjoy his life, and he'll go on, Matt tweets I've had saying he should be a Sky Sports pundit, and he'll do February the 1st, funnily enough, as a pundit. And I think I'd like to see him stay in the game. I think his short-term plan is no plan. But I think long-term, I think he can give a lot back to the game. And he's very well respected and very well liked.
It was you obviously did a very good promotional job. Not obviously, but you did do a good promotional job with Darren, getting the fight that you did. Because for a long time, when Darren was amongst the world rankings, the titles were even Germany or in the hands of Martinez or Golovkin, and so you got him the right fight at the right time. So he didn't have to go to Germany to fight for the title, and obviously he came up short against Martinez, but he never fought Golovkin either. So he got the right fight at the right time to get the belt.
Yeah, and I think the Martinez fight played a huge part in his victory against Gil, because he'd been there, he'd done it, he'd experienced it, and funnily enough, in the same city. Gil was the one they wanted. Gil was the one that they told me to go and get after the Kerry Hope and the Rotolo victories. And we managed to get it. And, you know, he didn't make a lot of money for that Gil fight. You know, it wasn't a great package, but it was the chance, and it was the one we felt Barker could win. And, you know, could he have beaten Sergio Martinez? Potentially a second time round, I think it would have been a great fight. Martinez isn't the fighter that he was when Barker fought him. Could he have beat Quillen? It's a really tough fight. Could he beat Golovkin? You'd have to say no. You know, could he beat Gil? That's the one. You know, that's the one we're targeting. And we got it. You know, and essentially that led to the title.
Okay. Just changing tacks. You went to see Carl Froch yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
How was the meeting, and what's been resolved as a consequence of the meeting?
No massive movement. I mean, okay, you know, it's my job as a promoter to sit down and go through all the options with Carl Froch. And I've said before, there are four options. And that's Andre Ward, that's Gennady Golovkin, that's George Groves, and that's Julio Chavez Jr. The most appealing of those, in my opinion, is Froch Groves. And there's a couple of reasons for that. One is because it makes a huge amount of money. And the second one is because it's probably the biggest fight Britain's ever seen, in my opinion. And to be quite honest with you, from a selfish point of view, I want to be part of that. And I want to be the one that promotes that fight. Of the others, the other one that's, you know, is right up there in terms of interest is the Chavez fight. It's a pay-per-view fight on HBO. It's a huge gate in America. It's a fight that I believe Carl Froch can win. And it's a chance for him to fight potentially in Vegas, which has always been a lifelong dream of his. I don't think he feels like he's got a lot to prove against George Groves, even though there's been a backlash in terms of, you know, would he have gone on to win or wouldn't he have? And I think as time goes on, more people believe he would have. But because of the way he reacted after the fight, and I have some sympathy with him, by the way, for that, because it's very difficult to have your marbles all intact to say the right things after the fight.
Especially if someone's rubbed you up the wrong
way. And especially if you don't like them.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, it worked against him. And like we said before this interview started, if you realise that this is all a game and a pantomime and a charade, it's great because you've gone from hero to villain, and perhaps you can go back to hero all over again. But Carl Froch isn't playing a game, and it's definitely hurt him, the fact that he's worked so hard to build himself up and gain the respect of the people, that in one interview, he can really lose it all, you know? So in answer to your question, you know, we looked at the Groves fight, we looked at the Chavez fight, and really, to be honest with you, they're the two that we're looking at. Ward, there isn't the money for that fight. He's not a big enough draw. And Golovkin, I don't think, is ready to move up to 168. And, you know, it's a very tough fight as well.
Both fights, Chavez and Groves, would they be in May?
I think so. Yeah, we're looking at the end of May. I mean, obviously, it's the World Cup in June, which is going to cause nightmare for scheduling issues, unless it's Chavez and it's abroad and it's 3 or 4 in the morning. Chavez has signed up to fight Brian Vera.
Yeah.
You know, I've got a call tonight with Bob Arum to talk about the fight. It appeals to Carl Froch. I won't lie. You know, I mean, it's a fight that appeals to Carl Froch. And it's not, you know, Froch isn't one of those people that you just push into a corner and tell him this is what you're going to do. Because he'll react adversely to that. So it's not a case of me going in and saying, right, you're fighting George Groves. It's, look, these are the options. My advice is to fight George Groves.
Okay.
And that's what my advice will be. And I think, to be honest, I think we'll get there. I've said it this week. And I think there's too much money and there's too much interest for this fight not to happen.
What's the stumbling block? I mean, given that...
Emotion.
What about money? I mean, given that Groves was a mandatory before, he would have been on a much smaller percentage. Mm. now he doesn't have the right as a mandatory challenger to or he doesn't have to be on a set percentage, but he's a bigger draw, and he's a better known name, so he would want more of the money. But as a voluntary defence for Carl,
he should get less. The money's always a stumbling block, but you're talking about swings of 5-10%, which ultimately, if both fighters want the fight, you know, we'll get there. You know, I think it's more about raw emotion. It's about not necessarily ego. It's very raw. It's very raw. And I could see, you know, again, you know, in this meeting with Carl, it's like I don't want to push the fight because he'll put a barrier up, you know. But I know that deep down, whilst he says he hasn't got a point to prove, I know that he wants to put it right. And the only way he can put it right is to go and beat George Groves for a second time or to fight him. I mean, I think, you know, the move now is to come out and say, you know what? And this is absolutely true. Carl Froch comes out and says, I have given the British public what they want my entire career. And to be honest with you, I don't really want to fight George Groves. And I don't really think he deserves it, personally. But I will do it for you all, like I've done it time and time again. And probably after a speech like that, it'll all change again and Carl Froch will be the hero again. But it is a pantomime. Yeah. You know, and that's what sells fights. Look at Eubank. You know, I said to Froch yesterday, look at Chris Eubank. He was hated but loved. Yeah, you know, sure. And people went to watch him lose. People slagged him off. People called him an arsehole. You know what I mean? But ultimately, people bought a ticket.
How many tickets do you sell to that fight if you make it the rematch?
Minimum 60,000. Maximum 80,000.
Okay. Wembley, 100%. Venue, if you,
I'd like again. That's something, you know. Would Froch want it in London? He's the champion. Mm. Do it in the City Ground.
Yeah.
You know, but then you're limited to 40,000-45,000. One thing's for sure, it'll be a stadium fight. It'll be outdoors. It's the right fight for that. And you know, I know people talk about stadium fights, but this is, I believe, it's the biggest fight the country's ever seen, and that makes me excited to be a part of it. I think selfishly. You know, me being selfish, even you being selfish, we need this fight.
It'd be a cracking trilogy, wouldn't it?
No, but you know, it's, we need the fight because we need the fight for the sport.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean Carl should just take it. You know, it's not, Carl, we need this fight, you've got to take it. It's got to be the right thing for Carl Froch.
Yeah.
And he has got aspirations and dreams of what he wants to do and where he wants to fight and what he wants to achieve, not just doing something because that's what people want.
Knowing what Carl's like, if he retired without fighting Groves again, would it always niggle him? And people
he'd probably say it wouldn't, but I think it would niggle any man, you know. And I think that's something he bears in mind. And you know, we talked about whether the rematch would be there in 8 months' time or a year's time, and you know, but I'm not sure, you know. And some journalists say, well, rematches rarely happen immediately after. That's bollocks. You know, the bottom line is if the demand is there, look at Ben against Collins. You know, the rematch happened in front of 35,000 people, you know. Yeah. So, you know, at the end of the day, I'll back Carl Froch with whatever decision he makes. But that, you know, I would, like I said to him yesterday, the thought of you fighting Chavez in Vegas is fantastic. I'd love to be a part of that. But the Groves is so big, you know, that fight, you just can't ignore it.
Are you close to signing George Groves?
It's more about the fight at the moment. I think if the fight happens, the two will come together. Because, again, it's a voluntary. So we'll be pushing for a rematch clause for Carl Froch, which George would accept. So therefore, you know, it would make sense for us to tie him up in some kind of deal, some kind of relationship. I think he's a great fighter. I like him as a person. I'd like him to be part of the team. But I don't want that to get in the way of potentially making the fight. And you know, first time round, I felt the same way. 99% of other promoters would have said to George Groves, you only get this fight if you sign with me. But if that was going to jeopardise that fight and that deal, I'm not interested. So, and again, I don't want to come out and sign George Groves and then, you know, it's all messy. I want priority first. Try and make the fight.
Okay. You also were with Kel Brook yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
What's the latest on Kel? Because obviously Sean Porter's got...
Yeah, it's a little bit of a frustrating time at the moment. We were all expecting Alexander to win, firstly. And then he would have had to fight Kel by, I think, the end of April or something like that. Which would have been ideal. Kel fought at the end of October against Senchenko. And then Sean Porter wins. So Sean Porter gets 6 months till he has to fight Kel Brook. So that's like June time. And neither fighter can take a fight after, I think it's the 10th of April, the IBF right. have stated. So if Poulter wants a voluntary, he can do so before the 10th of April. And if Kell Brook wants an interim bout, he can do so before the 10th of April. Unfortunately, you're up against people who don't seem to understand that any interim bout is not going to be against Adrian Broner or...
Superstar.
You know, yeah.
Superstar,
it's going to be someone that you can go in and fight a 10-round contest with.
Like Golovkin's got in Monte Carlo.
Yeah, Adama. I mean, you know, like that, to be honest with you, that's a terrible fight. You know, yeah. Golovkin against Adama. I don't mean to be rude, but like in terms of how good Golovkin is, that is a fight. I mean, there is no way in the world Golovkin can lose that fight. Like, it's impossible. So therefore, it's a shit fight. But I understand why. Go over there, tick over, keep relevant. And that's the same with Kell Brook. Mm. It's likely we'll box him on March the 15th on our Echo Arena card. And it'll be maybe a young undefeated opponent who he'll knock out in 5 or 6 rounds.
Yeah,
but there won't be me saying pretending that this is a real strong test for Kell Brook, because that's not going to happen. He's fighting for the world title in June.
It wasn't meant to happen with Carson Jones.
No, true. No, but that was different. That was an eliminator for the world title. Yeah. So that was supposed to be a proper fight. Yeah. I don't want this to be a proper fight.
No.
I want Kell to train and start his world title camp now, yeah. and use that fight as just something to focus the mind.
There's a lot to be said for that, actually, about keeping the fighters busy and active. Mm. Because if you think, if say Kell fights 4 times in a year instead of twice, you could say it's about any of the top guys, really, when you look at Frampton, Cleverley, Brook, Barker, who's just obviously retired, Bellew. There's a big difference between 4 fights and 2 fights a year in terms of how relevant they can stay in the public eye, isn't there?
There's a big difference in the money as well.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, if I'm going to box you 4 times a year, I say this to a lot of fighters, I'm going to pay you less than I am if you were going to box twice a year. So if you want more money per fight, I'll box you less. It's very simple. But the importance of being active, you know, from a commercial sense and from a developmental sense, is so important.
Because you get the week before in the press,
of course,
the week after.
But not just that, Trish. You get something to focus your mind on.
Yeah.
You know, these you're talking about young fighters, people like Kell Brook, who, you know, you go out and you have a fight and then that's it. Most fighters don't know when they're fighting next for 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks. I try to make sure, and nearly always, unless there's a situation of a purse bid or world title negotiations, you know when you're fighting next, because it helps to focus the mind. And these are young people with distractions in their lives. If you're fighting twice a year, you know, and then you're going to have 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 weeks off. You're going to balloon in weight. You're going to come back. It's going to be more difficult. You know, you're not going to be as relevant in the media. So, yeah, the key is always activity.
Okay. So, any opponent names that you're looking
at? Not really. No.
Okay.
I mean, first it was about establishing when he'll fight, and that looks like March the 15th at the Echo Arena, and now we'll look at an opponent.
Do you think it'll likely be somewhere between welterweight and light middleweight?
Yeah, it will be. I think it will be 10, 11, something like that. I mean, and he got stick for the Carson Jones fight. He weighed 10, 11 for the Carson Jones fight in Hull. And people saying, oh, it's just, you don't have a catch weight fight at championship weight. I mean, it's just madness. Why would you do that? Unless you're someone who makes the weight so well. And Kell does not make the weight so well. It's a mission for Kell Brook to make 10 stone 7. But with the right camp, he can do it comfortably.
Sure.
You know. But there's no way I'm going to make this fight at 10 stone 7. What's the point, you know?
Okay. Scott Quigg, one of your world champs, not sure what he's going to be doing this year, but I know around about Christmas time there were going to be some talks with you and Baron McGuigan about the Frampton fight. Did those talks happen?
No. I made an initial offer to Baron McGuigan, which went very quiet. They said they were going to focus on the parody fight and never came back. And then I made an improved offer to Barry in December, and he came back and he said he'd be up for talking. I've been away since. They went out to the Martinez fight, as did Scott. They've made Martinez a very big offer, which I'm aware about, and we've made him a big offer as well. We'll probably have chats. I mean, I don't know. I see Frampton's pulled out of the opportunity to have a final eliminator to become the mandatory for the IBF. So I'm presuming he's got something up his sleeve, which may be Martinez. I mean, what I'm hearing from Martinez's camp is they're not going to fight Frampton or Quigg next, which may be true or may not be true, but that's what we're hearing. And Quigg wants to get out in April rather than sort of May, June. So I probably, as a betting man, don't think that Quigg will fight Martinez next, but might do in the summer in a unification. Because if he has a voluntary now, he's got to fight the winner of Alvalos against, is it Vargas? Yeah. Which is a nothing fight. So he may look for the unification to avoid his mandatory. Maybe Frampton's got Santa Cruz lined up. I don't know. But no, I like to think Quigg Frampton will happen in 2014, you know, but obviously there's a lot of politics.
If you're a betting man, would it?
It depends. I don't know the contract he signed with Box Nation.
Okay.
Because if he signed an exclusive contract, that means he has to fight on Box Nation and can't fight anywhere else. It's irrelevant that I've offered him 275 grand. I might as well have offered him half a million. He can't do it, you know. So maybe that will be a stumbling point. I don't know. But listen, if they've both
to make such a good fight that's got that everyone's clamouring over, would you not let Scott fight on Box Nation?
Yeah, if the deal was right.
Okay, because that's kind of what my column's about this week, really, is promoters, TV networks, not just in the UK, obviously, but in the US, where it's a massive stumbling block and obstacle for big fights working together. So, I mean, it's good to know that you would let...
One thing I'd never do is say to a fighter, you can't. You know, if I sit down with a fighter and their trainer and we look at the deal and it's the right deal and it's a life-changing deal for that fighter, then, you know, it's up to the trainer and the fighter, essentially. I mean, all of the fighters that we represent want to box on Sky Sports. That's why they're with us. And, you know, so that's where they want to box. Generally, you will only see a fight between our fighters and, say, Frank Warren's fighters in a purse bid scenario.
Sure.
Because I want my fighters to fight on Sky. Frank wants his fighters to fight on Box Nation. So until there's a purse bid for a fight, then... You know, and we saw John Ryder fought Billy Joe Saunders on Box Nation. Paul Smith, when he was a Frank Warren fighter, fought Tony Dodson on our show. Liam Smith fought Eric Oching on a Matchroom show. So there are times where it happens. And I don't think myself or Frank are going to stop a fight for a purse bid scenario from happening, because it's fair, fair, it's fair, isn't it? I mean,
when was the last time you spoke to Frank?
I've never spoke to him ever in my life.
You know, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
didn't know that.
So, you know, I don't think we've got a lot to talk about. You know, there's a lot of legal stuff going on at the moment. If he phones me up for a coffee, it's not a problem. We'll go there. You know, I mean, I don't think he's particularly gets on well with my old man, but they chat. You know, they speak. They're amicable. You know, it's business at the end of the day. But. Now, my focus isn't really Frank Warren. My focus is to deliver for my broadcaster, which is Sky Sports.
He'd say the same about Box Nation. Yeah, sure. Okay. I've got some generic questions because I know I haven't got you for much longer. Some random ones. Nothing about crisps or sweets. So I'm not going to get you any crisps or sweets.
They get the most hits, those ones. Yeah,
we were talking about... we've been talking about books earlier today, actually, in the office. If you had an autobiography out, what would you call it?
Well, people call me Fast Car, don't they? I don't know why. Some bloke called me once and it's just stuck. So
Fast Car rides again?
I don't know. Fast Car goes bananas. Fast Car goes bananas. That's the one. I don't really read books. Someone brought me an Ali book for Christmas, which actually I've never seen before. And I've just got...
Not that big opus one, is it?
No, I don't think so. I've just got so much in my mind and brain with shows and fights that I don't really want to digest anymore. Info in there because I'm not the brightest, you know, and I think that my brain may explode if I start reading, taking all these books. And the only thing I read is BoxRec, you know, religiously. And what a great website that is as well, by the way.
What websites do you actually use? Like, do you digest written articles?
I used to read the forums quite a lot, and I've lost a bit of faith in the forums, to be honest with you. I felt that forums like Eastside Boxing, probably 2 years ago, were full of, you know, quite informative and intelligent stuff, and lately it seems to have gone a bit silly. You know, it's quite funny, some of the stuff, but it's not, you know, it used to be a source of information for me, really, because, you know, you find out things on forums because there's a lot of people in there who, a lot of other promoters as well who are on there, but you find stuff. BoxRec forum I use quite a lot, Boxing Scene, you know, obviously, in your site as well. You know, I think I try and read as much boxing stuff as I can, but BoxRec, I'm more about records.
Stats and that.
Yeah. I'm more about divisions. You know, I mean, I can tell you virtually any fighter in any position, don't test me, you know, in any way, in any division, you know, in governing bodies and stuff like that. So yeah, because it's important to map out, you know, a plan for your fighter in every division that they're in. And every fighter that we represent, I could tell you what the plan is straight away, you know, and it's a 3-4-5 fight plan. And it might be win the central area, you know, fight for the English, then have an eliminator, you know, or it might be have a final eliminator with a WBC, then fight for a world title. Everyone's different.
Let's play that game then. Tony Bellew, next three fights.
Well, then he'll fight. So, yeah.
Swing a water if you like.
One sec, well, I'll just think up.
Exactly.
Well, he'll fight his first fight at cruiserweight on March the 15th. And we're looking at a number of opponents. Guys like Silvio Branco, guys like Fragomelli, guys like Valerie Brudoff, you know, guys who have been at the top level. I need someone that's going to test Tony Bellew.
So Fragomelli, the ex-Hay opponent.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's a good fight. I mean, I know he's 37 or something like that, but he's a good name.
He's been knocking around in decent competition.
Yeah, exactly. I think the first fight will be a little bit, you know, like a Valerie Brudov, who's fought for the world title three. I think he's gone the distance with Hernandez and or one of the other champions. Then I look at sort of Fragomelli or Silvio Branco, perhaps for the WBC silver title or even an eliminator with another body. And then we look for a world title fight in fight three. That's all that Tony wants, really, is to fight for the world title again. The Cleverley fight is out there, but I understand he looks like he might stay at light heavyweight. So, you know, that's really the free fight plan is, you know, something where... And Tony wants to just go straight for a Fragomelli or whoever now, but my concern is that this is a new division, this is a new chapter, this is a new challenge. Let's go in there and fight a quality opponent, but to feel it out, you know, because it's a new challenge and it's a different division altogether. And I think it's going to, you know, it's not just something you're just going to slip into. It's not like going from welterweight up to light middle, in my opinion. You're going from 12-7 up to 14 stone and, you know, some big guys.
Is there a champion that you've got your eye on for Tony?
It's a really tough division, isn't it? I mean, you look at, you know, Hernandez got the IBF title, Huck's got the WBO title, the Pole, I won't even try and announce his name, he's got the WBC title. You know, Guillermo Jones is a WBA champ, so it's really, really difficult. Sauerland have got Hernandez and Huck, and they're crying out for opponents. So, you know, and the Pole is quite accessible. So I think all fights can be made, but there's no easy fight for that world title at cruiserweight.
There was a story that someone told me about earlier that you dropped your dad in sparring three times. Is that right?
That's correct.
Any regrets?
No. Well, the thing was is that he always said to me when I was 18, he was going to teach me a lesson. You know, he said, we're going to go down the gym and we're going to have a proper spar, no head guards. He said, I'm going to teach you about life, which is what he said. So I said, all right then, you know, I was boxing at the time at Billericay Boys Club. I had two bouts, very good, but I was quite game. And I got to 16, I was like probably about 5'11", and he sort of said, right, we'll do it now, 2 years early. And we went up to Romford, and we only had sort of, they were a cross between sort of bag mitts and sparring gloves, probably like 8-ounce gloves. And he come out like a steamroller. I just remember putting my hands up and looking through the guard, and his teeth were gritted, and he was slinging shots left, right, and centre. And I thought, this is serious stuff. So I just hit him with like left hook to the body, I think twice, and he took a knee, and I couldn't believe it. And he was so embarrassed, like it was like, you know. And then he got up, and then I hit him with I think another one, and then maybe a right hand to the body, and then that was it. He just said, right, that's it, fair enough. You know, and it was in the paper the next day because he told journalists. He was, I think he was half proud, you know, but he told journalists about it and it was in the paper. So, yeah, it's a true story.
You mentioned the fast car nickname. What was your first car?
I had a Ford Escort, a white one.
Was it brand new?
No, it wasn't. No.
What plate did you have?
I think it was like a K Reg or a J Reg or something like that. It was about two or three years old.
J Reg Escort.
Did you? Yeah. It was about, well, you're probably a bit older than me.
Come on. Give me
well, you're what? You're 36?
34.
Oh, yeah. That's the same age as me. Yeah, well, there you go. But you know when you pass your driving test?
The only difference is I haven't got a Bentley now.
But when you pass your driving test, you know, you get in the car for your first time. I just remember going to see my mate and I drove down the road and I was all over, but I was thinking, blimey, am I all right to drive this? Because, you know, and I got I went from a white escort.
Probably what you feel is ahead of match from
there. Yeah, exactly. am I really able to do this? I had a white escort and I got a black escort. Okay. Really stepped up my game after that.
So, apart from Froch Groves, you could make one fight this year. What fight would you make?
In terms of my fighters I'm able to make, Quick Frampton is still a big fight. You know, I think Scott is a fantastic fighter and a great world champion, and Frampton's a really, really good young fighter as well. You know, obviously we worked with him before. I know how good he is, and he's a quality fighter. I think that's a really good fight.
Commercially, do you think it makes more sense in Ireland?
Yeah, it definitely. I think it sells out anywhere, to be honest with you. I mean, I say that, but you know, in certain periods of the year, the only option is the Odyssey Arena, really, which only holds 9,000. Mm. And I know we'd sell more than 9,000 at the MEN for that fight, because you'd probably get 4,000, you know, Irish coming over.
You had a load of McCloskey.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we had like 3,000 for that. So, I'd want to put it in the biggest arena possible. And Scott Quigg is the champion of the world, so I want it to happen in Manchester. And my offer was for it to happen in Manchester. You know, other fights. Calm Brook remains just a dream of mine to make, because I think it's such a great fight. And you talk about rivalries and the big domestic fights, that's a build-up that would grow and grow and grow, because Amir likes to shoot his mouth off. I don't think Kel would be shy either. And I think, you know, I don't know the ins and outs. You may know more about me than the Calm Mayweather situation, but what I'm hearing and my perception of that is that I don't think Floyd's too happy that Amir said that his contract was signed when, you know... and I've got a funny feeling that fight might not happen. I know it's a favourite to happen, and again, we might finish this interview and say, by the way, it's done. But if that fight doesn't happen, I think Kel would probably forgive his shot at Poulter for a fight with Khan.
Yeah, it's a bigger fight.
Because it's a huge fight, it's a box office fight, and it's one he wants really badly. You know, I'd still like to make Bellew against Cleverly. You know, I think that's a really good fight. I'd like to get Burns through the Crawford fight and then fight Vasquez. You know, we tried to look at that fight this time around and the numbers just didn't add up and weren't there. You know, other fights, I'd like to get Selby in a position to challenge for the world title. I think he's good enough to win a fight. Also like the fight with him and Billy Dibb, him and Joel Brunker, you know, these kind of fights as well. And then, of course, for this year, probably late end of this year, I'd like to make Joshua against Tyson Fury or Joshua against Chisora. You know, I feel as though, I know he's only had 3 fights, but I think by then he would have had 8, 9, 10 fights, and I think he'll be good enough and strong enough to go in with
Tyson
these guys.
Fury.
Yeah.
And, yeah, okay.
Yeah, I mean, Huey Fury is a fight I'd like to make. I'm not sitting here saying these fighters aren't quality fighters, because Huey Fury is a quality fighter, and I think Peter's done a great job with him. But I just don't think he's in Anthony Joshua's league. So that's a fight I'd look to happen in sort of early summer. And the likes of Tyson Fury and Chisora, you know, end of 2014, early 2015, I think he'll be ready for him, because the division's so thin. And when we're looking through the rankings now, you know, when he's beating the likes of Dorian Dartch, and, you know, I'm not saying they're world title challengers and contenders, but what's the step after that? Sam Sexton, you know, Michael Sprott, these kind of guys, who I expect him to be fighting in the summer. What happens when he beats them? You know, I mean, they're the fights that you're going to go on to. And I think Joshua will end up emerging himself as a pay-per-view fighter. So he'll be able to bring and pick and choose his opponents as we please.
Sure.
You know.
Okay, well, look, I appreciate your time. It's nice of you to stop by the office.
It's a pleasure.
And we'll have to catch up again soon.
Look forward to it.
All right, thanks for joining us. Cheers.